It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters and the Wisconsin Poet Laureate Commission, they are about to pass the torch to the next state poet laureate, whose term starts next month. We have Wisconsin Poet Laureate Dasha Kelly Hamilton to reflect on her work spreading the love of poetry over the past couple years. Join in 800-642-1234. Conversation is right here, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dasha is a public poet for over 20 years, author of 2 novels, 3 poetry collections, 4 spoken word albums, and a collection of personal vignettes. Dasha, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. It's great to be back with you, Kate.
Yeah, I feel like we're bookending you as Poet Laureate. I mean, we talked at the start, we talked in the middle,
yes.
Now here at the end. So how do you feel about what it was like to serve as State Poet Laureate? I hate to put it in the past tense, but, you know, what's...
I know.
What's running through your mind?
When you say with a bookend, this bookend stand on the shelf, I'm like, no, but I get it, but no. It's really been an incredible experience, especially... building out this term and making these connections and being able to serve partially during a pandemic. We really needed to be inventive. But I tell you, what other passport to make connections and have conversations with neighbors across the state? And it was always a surprise when there'd be someone that, hey, aren't you? Like, what? There are other poets? Because we have to explain what it is, who we are and what it is we do, and why it is we are committed to these words. So it's been absolutely a proud moment and a joy for me.
Your Poet Laureate term, as you mentioned, came during a pandemic. Your term mm-hmm. started as we saw the breach of the U.S. Capitol and the insurrection. You know, how have you approached talking about race and representation and systemic racism in your term?
A couple of ways. I found one, when I walk into the room being a 5'9" Black woman, that's going to be step one. And being the first African-American and Black woman to be the state laureate also brings conversation on its own. So some of the work is done just by my name being on the flyer and me showing up into a space. And I also, because I have literally the platform, whether I'm at a microphone, or I'm doing a keynote, or I'm invited to an experience, I'm invited to speak, and I fill my content with information that talks about my story, that is inspiring about creativity. And I also make it a point to find ways to necessarily talk specifically about race. This mm-hmm. is what we got to do, what we need to do, what you ought to do. But to remind us that here's how humans make this dynamic happen. And here's the invitation that we all have to reevaluate what we think we know. So those are I include poems, I'll include little narratives, and I often even just pose questions to the audience. So I'm pretty frank, but at the same time, it's not a, it's not a hellfire preach moment. So no one, I think, leaves shaking or crying or angry, because this doesn't have to be a conversation like that. And much of my other creative professional work is about bringing people into the conversation in an authentic way.
Creative change agent. And I think that's a really good segue, though, to Making Cake and this, your national tour on that performance, that stage performance. Can you talk to us about Making Cake?
Yes. I was invited a few years ago to go to City of Sheboygan. The Kohler Arts Center invited me to come and do some community engagements. They said, we're ready for you to come. We've seen you speak a few times now. We're ready to talk about race. So I put together these engagements of different groups in the community, and there's magic markers involved and flip charts, and I'm asking goofy questions, and then boom, we're talking about power. We're talking about equity. We're talking about our own narratives in this bigger picture. And one of the things that I point out in that space is this is not an us and them discussion. This is not a issue for someone else to think about. All of us are in the same water. So even if your relationship to race is, I never think about it, that's your relationship to race. And that is in this story that we are all figuring out together. And so the conversations were really rich. And one of the discussions was at a bakery. And all these discussions, I then needed to turn into a show. And I thought, man, if we could just get everybody together and sit them down, they'll see this conversation is heavy and there's pain in it, but the dialogue does not have to be painful. Mm. But sit them down together and we can all have cake. Ding. And so I've done shows and written pieces about objects before, mm-hmm. and all of objects have stories behind them. So I started researching the ingredients of cake, the objects, the ingredients of cake, and they began to tell the story. It told a story of access, of privilege. You needed to be wealthy to have sugar. You needed to have, as I say in the show, a pastry team of servants and slaves to be able to make a cake at one point, because it used to take 4 days to bake a cake. So as I'm going through learning about these histories of the evolution of how we've come to bake cakes, it also aligned with dates and stories and narratives about how we came to be a nation that has built in racism and sexism and wealth inequality in how we function. And because where we sit today in 2022, almost 2023, there is still a huge swath of residents, neighbors who choose to believe that that sentence I just said is not true. That's one of the things I also talk about, that we are creative beings, which means that our brains put together things that didn't happen, which means we are capable of imagining things forward, which means if we choose to disbelieve facts that are in front of our faces, we're making a conscious decision to be willfully ignorant. And why do we do that? So in a very gentle way and just very point blank, these are the emotional reasons why this conversation is tough, not because of the facts. So in telling this story, I'm funny, I like to think. we're talking about cake. It's interesting, and it's hard information, but it's not a hard sell. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the show, I have painted a pretty clear picture that the way that we sit in our nation today is a result of things that were intentionally built in, literally baked in, to benefit particular attitudes and populations at the time.
So interesting and so important conversation. Wisconsin poet laureate Dasha Kelly Hamilton at our side and talking about poetry, the production of Makin' Cake. You can join in 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now to Wisconsin Poet Laureate Dasha Kelly Hamilton, a writer, a performance artist, a creative change agent. We take stock of her outreach initiatives and all the work she's done to help Wisconsinites see the value of poetry. Call in 800-642-1234. Conversation on poetry, 800-642-1234. Let's take a call. Jack is with us in Madison. Jack, go ahead.
Good morning. My mom is something of a hobbyist baker, and you know, she draws on a lot of recipes, especially from like the Nordic countries and kind of, I guess, sort of European and North American traditions. And one of the ideas that really stuck with me with your guest, the poet laureate, is, you know, the process of breaking bread, excuse me, out of alliteration there, but the idea that there's a lot of systemic inequalities built into, like, I guess, the process of harvesting ingredients for cakes and sort of this whole notion of and discrimination and these imbalances. And kind of like, as a son of someone who is big into baking, or just as a community, it's like, what can we do to better reconcile with communities and, you know, work towards quality within the baking community and, I guess, our society in general? And how does, I guess, present that and deal with that?
Jack, appreciate that so much. Dasha, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that story. And they're absolutely making that is the point. And what we often are trying to, our fear is we can't fix everything. And we don't want to offend, and we don't. I've had a conversation with a woman. It's about the confrontation, and it's about telling your story. Just you sharing that, you've informed many of the folks who are listening who wouldn't have considered that even in baking, absolutely, because that's where humans are. So as a human who's aware of this, what questions can we ask? How do we stand in the gap? How do we choose a vendor that isn't all that isn't common? How do we stretch ourselves? And that's what's going to be the next step. How do we press people to tell to make an honest statement, to ask a question, not to let that casual, untrue, inauthentic statement just float by on the dinner table as we comfortably have done for so long. And this is every we. It's the habit, and that we is not restricted to any particular group or person. And to be curious. And that's the biggest part, and especially thinking in terms of prevention, in terms of living forward. How can you be more curious, and not just simply about your neighbor, not just simply about other cultures, but curious about the things that you don't quite get, that don't quite make sense, that have never quite made sense, that you haven't questioned. And everyone's not going to necessarily become, you know, lobbyists or policymakers or marching in the street, but with every person waking up one little part of their curiosity, and making a choice to stand on it, those that will have that butterfly effect of our mindset shifting, because this is not as much an issue. It is an issue of policy and programs and how do we actually bring people into the fold. But it's a mindset of understanding that what we have in place now absolutely should be better for many people. So I think it's about empathy, it's about curiosity, and it's about informing ourselves with what is compared to what we've been told or what we've decided should be.
I wonder, as you talk about that mindset, I mean, you've put on Making Cake in big cities and in rural communities with people from all kind of walks of life and segments. And I'm just wondering how... Have you seen differences in how it is received in different areas?
I have. And I want to, what's interesting is we just took the show out of the state for the first time a couple months ago. In October, we performed in Kentucky and in rural Georgia. And I had a girlfriend, she says, are you sure you're going to be all right? I think I'll be okay. I think I'll be all right. And I did feel the room, and there's a particular, there's a particular turning point in the show, and I could feel the room tighten in a way that I hadn't felt when I performed the show in Wisconsin.
Can we pause right there? And so sorry, we're in conversation with Wisconsin State Poet Laureate Dasha Kelly Hamilton, and you're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin's Poet Laureate Dasha Kelly Hamilton wrapping up her two-year tenure, and she's come by to inspire hope, bring poetry into our lives, be part of our conversation. Your questions about poetry, 800-642-1234. Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dasha, you've brought us some poems. I'm wondering if we could just kind of stretch out and listen to the poetry you've brought us.
Sure thing. The first one I'm going to read is called Chunks and Slices. In the cake show, I have a recipe book that offer the recipes of the cakes I tell stories about in the show, and it also includes some original poems and stories that I've written. And so this, and I want to say too, with the show, it's not at all a lecture. I know it made it feel like a workshop, but I'm telling stories. It's projected media, and I have two bakers baking cakes live on the stage. And the audience, we have cake together and talk about what we heard. Mm. So, chunks and slices. His mother moved the knife to the right and to the right, and she pushed the blade down. In spite of protests, carving a chunk of cake quadrupled the slices she'd cut for me and my sister. Our smallest mouths, dusted with crumbs of her freshly baked Sakatumi cake, puckered greedily still at the block on Daddy's plate. On the ride home, he laughed with us about the cake chunk he didn't want. Adulthood pulled back a veil from this memory. Maturity granted me access to previously classified family histories. Grown-up eyes recalled Daddy's smile as more practiced patience than amusement, enamored by sweet-tooth silliness, exhausted from teetering cake displays. I listen differently now to stories that drift down from family trees, fluttering down the blanket, gnarled roots and falsified truths, kindling and keepsakes for us all. I've grown to savor the nutty gumption that bonds bloodline to family trees. I taste the whip and whisk of heavy cream, an infusion of generational ache, our collisions of soul baked into every family bite.
Oh, thank you so much. And it's as if cake is a gateway to stories and history, yeah, and pain and celebration and just all of the emotions of life.
Mm-hmm. I have one that's a haiku, and I was still working on it. One of the things that happens with the laureateship, there were two writing residencies. So I did one last spring in at Shake Rack Alley, and then fall I did one in Door County. And so my guide, my director and I are going to my reading, and I was telling him about this haiku I was still editing, and it's titled Margarine. Mm-hmm. And the haiku is, butter, Miss Judy hissed at my mother, you think you're better than us? And it's a true story, of course. And so Dan turns and looks at me while he's driving, which has made it so dramatic. It was like his eyes were wide. He says, so I'm from Pittsburgh, Steel Town, and I've grown to love to cake, to bake. I love to cook, and I love to cook with butter. And my family has also teased me about, why isn't margarine good enough for you anymore? So those are the moments as a writer, as a poet, and knowing what the note I'm trying to hit when something that I've written resonates with someone's whole life. So that was, for such a small haiku, such a small thing. Yeah, so our neighbor was offended that my mother baked or made her bake with butter.
You brought Jack and Diane with you as well. Could you read that one?
I did bring Jack and Diane. I'm going to switch gears and read here.
Oh,
Jack and
okay.
Diane was one of my new favorite poems, but I know it'll be a little bit too long. It's probably, okay. I need about 4 minutes to read it, so I'll read this one instead. And this is called Here.
Okay.
And this is something that I was invited to prepare for the Sun Prairie School District. They did a kickoff, bigger than a pep rally, although we were on the football field and all of that. All of the teachers, all of the staff, before they got their school year started, they've made some, they have a new school. They redesigned how this, what's schools the students go through. And the community has had this incredible investment also in embedding their school system and their outreach programming with an understanding of race and class and equity. So I was really proud, of course, to be invited, blown away by this rally for these teachers. And what I thought of to write for them is this piece called Here. Here is not temporal or geographical. Here is always where you are. Here is the first time, the oddest place, that singular state of mind, both offering and announcement, here is yours to claim. Here is a pile of gathered leaves and store receipts, deep kisses, missed rides, and cotton swabs cooling skinned knees. Here is a swallowed apology, an unspoken prayer, a bellow, a whistle, some whispered praise. Here is the aggregate of circumstances, your collection of detours and dreams. Here is your pregnant promise, all you are birthing, all you've ever been. Here is one moment and kaleidoscope memories. Here is a clenched fist and heart trembling. Here is pulling the door closed and stepping out into the sun. Here is a heartbeat between dusk and dawn, a blink at some sliver of your expansive existence. Here is always where you are.
Oh, Dasha, thank you so much for that. And I also want to think about how here you have been as poet laureate, like always with us in some way. I mean, your outreach and just the way that you reach so many different communities in Wisconsin. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. I have a super short one I don't want to sneak in as well.
You can sneak it, sure.
It comes from the project that I did as state laureate called Alignment, where look at the beginning of this, where I described this initiative where I pulled a poem line. I pulled poems from my predecessor, Peggy Rothko, the prior laureate. Mm-hmm. She published a book. I pulled 12 poems out of there and one line from each of those poems and used those lines as poetry prompts. And it was an open invitation for writers across the state. And in particular, I worked with incarcerated writers. So as these poems came in each month, I continued the process and pulled a line from the poems that came in to make little sound poems. And this one is called Every Distance Seems Like an Opening, which is a line from a poem by Dana Maya. I walk out into the deep water, and still voices are circling around to bind us all to the place where stars are born. You are the distance that allowed us to become more intimate. Did you know you helped write music for these words and will always be there? Can we not share space, brave the elements, caressed by sun's last light touch, blue-gray with hues, maximizing my potential, because life is such a bumpy road, if only we had known. So each of those lines came from someone different, and this poem itself is pulled together from, there are poets laureate in this poem. So this is from Jefferson, from Oshkosh Correctional, from a farm in Levaya, from Waupun Correctional, from the laureate of Milwaukee, from the laureate of Sheboygan, from Oconomowoc, from New Lisbon Correctional, from an artist in Madison, the poet of Oshkosh. And I love these wrappings of each month, and that I've had the opportunity to make these unexpected connections through my term. And the whole intention was just through poetry, just reminding us, not needing to have a whole abolition rally, but just a reminder that in this poem, yes, there are people within it who are incarcerated, but they're people. Who are incarcerated, who are people, who write poems.
It's like,
here we are on the same page together.
Yeah, and it's like this patchwork quilt of a poem, or it's like you're piecing together so many different lives, people from so many different perspectives and situations that they're in. That, to me, is so beautiful about it.
That's right. It's been an amazing, amazing project, and I'm looking forward to seeing it continue having life beyond my tenure. One, the website that we created to collect the poems, and beginning discussions with the English department at Marquette about it being a project that their students take on and continue, and also in conversation, or beginning discussions rather, of putting together, presenting a proposal to have the anthology published of these little snippet poems, the pieces that were submitted, and some original works from me. So I'm excited that this bonding over poetry and a conversation about incarcerated, excarcerated writers, and just humans trying to make another, literally write a new story, that we can put that to press and have more of this fun.
We're almost out of time, but I do want to ask you this one last question before we have to go. You know, we've heard on our show, Marcus in Milwaukee, Richard in Milwaukee, they both called us this year and urged more conversations about hope and more conversations mm-hmm. about unity and how ways we can be uplifted when things aren't good around us. How can poetry do that? Do you look to poetry for hope?
That is a great question. I would say, yes, I do. And I would say there are a couple ways to go about that. I still prefer to watch or listen to the poet or someone read the poems out loud because there's just a different connection and experience. So mm-hmm. one, putting in a word into your internet and a video will come up. Going through poets.org from the Academy of Poets, and you'll find any topic that can offer you a place to think a little bit differently, because the way poems are put together is you don't necessarily have to make sense of them. I know for me, that's what kept me from poetry. They didn't all make sense. But now I can see it's that sense that maybe not be your logic. It feels right. Mm-hmm. It feels warm. It feels hopeful. So leaning into poetry that way, and they can be joyful puzzles. They were frustrating puzzles when I first was introduced to the art. But once I let go of trying to analyze and read them like fiction, like a newspaper, mm-hmm. You could see the playfulness in the language. And what it gives us permission to do also is to realize that the stuff between the lines is where the magic is. Mm-hmm. And that can give us a bit of calm. It can give us a bit of relief in just admiring, accepting, and celebrating the beauty that is. And even if we don't recreate it, having that moment for yourself will get you to the next one. And I think that's how hope happens.
Dasha, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for all these contributions as Wisconsin's Poet Laureate.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Dasha Kelly Hamilton, completing a 2-year term as Wisconsin Poet Laureate this month. Term of the next day Poet Laureate begins after the new year. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You're with us for The Morning Show. It is the year-end membership drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent with Rob Ferret. Your support, it is vital to all the programs on WPR. It is the largest source of funding. So take a few minutes now on this last day of this drive when we have a match to support the programs you count on with your year-end gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Clock is ticking. Your last few minutes to give during the morning show on this last drive of the year. Your last few minutes to get that dollar-for-dollar match. Get your gift, in effect, doubled. Thanks to current members, including a member in Whitewater. Your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 into $200, and so on. Take advantage of this match, but do it right now. Double your support when you give in the next few minutes at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Oh my goodness, what an absolute pleasure to have an exit interview with Wisconsin's Poet Laureate. I mean, so special to hear that poetry and the meaningful conversations that have come through her work as Poet Laureate. And, you know, as we live in such a world where it's fast news and sound bites, it's so nice to just take a moment and regroup and think about, poetry. And these are the kinds of beautiful conversations that we try to bring you here from the morning show.
Yeah, the Ideas Network brings you interesting people doing amazing stuff mm-hmm. all over Wisconsin that I feel like if I didn't work here or listen, I wouldn't know about. It's a unique service and it's listener supported. And that means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes all these great conversations possible. Choose the amount that works for you and then make your gift and get it matched dollar for dollar.
And this member drive, you can provide hunger relief in your area. Ask for a food bank thank you gift when you give $10 a month or more today. And thank you for making a difference for your neighbors and the WPR programs you love at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Public radio has enriched my life in so many ways. When I was a new mother back in the 1990s, and I became hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been an avid listener, and each day of my life is enriched because of the depth of the topics offered, the balanced dialogue that the host and the guests both offer. The Ideas Network makes me a better mother and a better citizen, and I'm so thankful for it.
Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It is the year-end member drive and the last hours of it. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Rob Ferret. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. It's why your gift of $10 a month or $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, has an important impact.
And it has a double impact if you start making that gift as I'm talking right now. Dollar for dollar match still in effect for just the next couple of minutes. Get online at WPR.org and make that gift or call 888-202-2552 in the last couple minutes of the morning show during this drive.
And you might think that you don't have to support WPR because somebody else is. Well, WPR has been around for over 100 years because thousands of people have made the decision to support something that's important to them.
Now it's time for you to make that very important decision. Many first-time donors will give $10 or $20 a month. You choose what works best for you. Get it doubled if you do it right now. Give now. It is time at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Shout out to Levi in Janesville who says, I so appreciate WPR during my morning drives. Thank you. Thank you, Levi, and your gift right now, so important at WPR. .org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio.